Welcome back in. It is showtime again. Excited because the off season is upon us, and I think it's a really cool season. It was a long season, Brent. Like Brent Rollins joining me. Remember, PFF Rivals contributes to both of those. Long season. If your team wasn't in the mix, like I don't know, an FSU early in the season, you kind of like checked out, right? But
well, that was really early. That might have been a bad example.
I mean, it was really early in the season, right? Like. I saw something on the internet. They got more inches of snow than they had wins. So it was a rough season. But here's the cool thing we've talked about. Like, your season can be turned around quickly. And we'll talk about this all off season, which is going to be a lot of fun. But I think over the next 12 weeks too, the draft. And you're going to talk about some of your guys that were in college that are going to the next level, who they are, where they rank, what teams are looking for. I think there's plenty of that to cover. But I think the biggest news probably in the college football world, Brent, is Jim Knowles, who was a prize recruit of Ryan Day a couple years ago, got him in to come and fix the defense that was really struggling. And he did. He fixed them, recruited well, developed well. Their system got good enough where Ohio State just won a national title. And now he gone. Where he going, Brent?
He took a, what was it, $9.3 million contract, I think.
God bless America.
To go to Penn State, which I did see the video where he said, you know, growing up where he grew up, Penn State was it and everything about it. So this felt like home and he wanted to kind of go there. But there were a lot of Benjamins that said,
let me tell you something. I'll be really excited to go to another state when you give them that kind of money. I mean, that's obviously, but how about the blow to like, here's what I love about it. If I'm a Penn State fan, like not only did I just get one of the best DCs in all of college football, I just crippled my rival. Like the team that I can't get over the hump and win the Big Ten, that the national champions, I just took their defensive coordinator. Like that is such a double whammy. It's such a big win that I improve, I get better, and at the same time, I take away from my arch nemesis.
The thing I would love to see in terms of like those that comment on the show and chat and things like that, as an Ohio State fan, are you like, okay, let's find somebody else. We'll do something because obviously, prior to the middle part of this season, it wasn't like he was, you know, at the top of the happiness. Everybody was happy with him list in a way, especially with how they'd performed against Michigan defensively, and Michigan had run all over him. So that's one. But for Penn State, you think about, hey, our defense gets better, gets a defensive mind that's led some of the best defenses in the country. Yeah, I actually think about it from an offensive perspective. I think it makes their offense better. Because now you're in the same room and in the same building with the guy who's literally held you to, and held you to nothing the last two or three years, you know, very much slowed you down the last two or three years. So that to me is almost worth its weight in gold, especially when you got a lot of guys coming back on your offense for Penn State. And he's like, look, yeah, I knew I had to stop this. I knew if you were in this formation or this situation, you're going here because that's your tendency. And I just know you as a good one. So like, all that sort of stuff. I think it's still a win for Penn State. It is a win.
Yeah. And it's a huge, what you just said is so important because you think about Penn State next year. Yes, they absolutely lose Ty Warren. Big deal. Offensive line all back. Second year in the system. Drew Aller back. Third year as a starter. Allen and Singleton back. Two physical running backs. Like I saw a lot of scheme change from Penn State, and up front, I saw more zone and more effectiveness by the offensive line. So I think it's going to continue. So now your defense gets a new boost and a change of a system, which I think will be very, very successful. So it's a great day for Penn State. And here's the interesting part, Brent. Like to me, it's cool because you choose how you want to use your funds. Everybody only has so much. I can go spend it on players. Absolutely. You can do that. Mm-hmm. I would argue the money they just spent for Knowles is well spent. Like it's better than going and getting a player. Like it is really good now to have a system that is versatile that you can trust. And so Penn State's always got defensive dudes. I mean, guys yes. that penetrate, that get in the back. The number one pick who we're about to talk about when we talk about draft is going to be Abdul Carter. Like, and they find those super freaks all the time. And it's a strength of theirs, and they've already been in the portal to address some of those needs, and they'll continue to. But I just think it makes a lot of sense. And Brent, I've talked to you this before. Going into the season, my number one coaching combination was Ohio State. Like having Ryan Day as your head coach, Chip Kelly as your OC, Jim Knowles as your DC. You know, it's interesting. I think the number two is James Franklin, Al Golden, and Dimbrock. Like I think that was
Freeman, Marcus Freeman.
What did I say?
You said James Franklin. You're too much on Penn State there. But you're meeting Notre Dame though.
Yeah, Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman, like being able to have him now asserting himself multiple years, like you can tell Denbrock as an OC is elite. And then you talk about Al Golden. Now, Al Golden is gone. So, like, it's interesting now because I think Penn State with Colton Ecke and with Jim Knowles, I think they have the best 1-2 punch at OC and DC. And that's something to be very proud of I'm a Penn State fan. So like the recruiting classes, I might not be number one in the nation. I might not have the best transfer portal class. I got two elite coaches, two great coaches. And so I got to feel really good about moving forward.
Does it make somebody's seat a little warmer in any way?
I mean, they just went to the semifinals.
I know, but there's still maybe I'm sure there's a part of the Penn State fan base is like, hey, we're giving you all these resources. Can you take the next step kind of thing? So especially if it just is an interesting thing for me because that's a dynamic where he's struggled so much against teams that he's not, you know, the top five teams and the teams he's not necessarily been, you know, obviously hasn't been favored, but still there's some struggles there from James Franklin. So, hey, more smart people in the room. If you're a leader and you want to get better guys in the room, more smart people in the room. With Noel specifically, I only know him as a defensive coordinator. He was a head coach at Cornell. And then since 2010, he's been a defensive coordinator. So Duke for a while, Oklahoma State, Ohio State, and then now Penn State. So like that's one of those where he's just, all right, I'm good being the defensive coordinator. And by the way, when you can make $3.1 million being a defensive coordinator, it's not a bad gig.
God bless America. Don't have to worry about running the whole team. Don't have to worry about all the ins and out of being a head coach. That's a great job to have. I mean, that's a really good job. And I think it's interesting now to look at Ohio State because, Brent, I'm not so sure they're not going to lose both coordinators. I think it's very possible that Chip Kelly's in NFL gone too. Yeah, well, NFL – doesn't have to deal with the transfer portal and all the stuff that we just talked about. Like he doesn't have to be, and listen, I don't know how much he's doing in that capacity anyways, but I'm sure some of it, but just to go coach ball and do your own thing. Like I just would not be shocked if Ohio State lost both of their coordinators. And that would be a tremendous blow because I think that's part of the reason they got over the hump. You know, they've been here, they've been in that mix and Ryan Day has been on the precipice of winning. And obviously his record speaks for himself, but you know, they still haven't gotten over that hump and won the championship till this year. And if you're an Ohio State fan, I think you'd be very frustrated to go, crap, man, seriously? Like, we just got there, and now we lose our OC and DC?
Well, it's one where I guess teams that are winning at that level, it's kind of the norm, though. I mean, Georgia's had to replace a lot of coordinators throughout the last few years. Saban always had to replace a bunch of coordinators. I mean, it just seems like that's the cycle.
It's not fun. It's not,
and it oftentimes makes you progressively, like just tick a little bit each time worse. So you know, that's.
You know another thing that pisses me off, like if you're going to, and this is just something, it just happened to happen with Knowles, but like if a coach leaves, an OC or a DC leaves, and I know there's rules for the head coach leaving, and you can transfer. If an OC leaves. There's basically what after the playoffs, there's a 5-day window. There's a 5-day window after your team gets knocked out where you can enter the transfer portal and
or the draft.
Yeah. But that Jim Knowles waited till after that 5-day window. So Ohio State players are stuck there. And listen, here's why I say that, Brent, you commit to systems that accentuate your strengths, right? Like you commit to guys, whether you like it or not. I can't stand that we do this. And Nick Saban did it last year when he retired. Remember, like he made sure, you know, some of the window was closed. And I know there's gamesmanship to it, but if your OC leaves or your DC leaves and the system you're going to play in, like I feel like you should be have the opportunity as a player to also be able to hit the portal. I think that would be more fair, but we also got enough of this crap going on.
And they
on
can. There'll be the spring window. Like, there'll be the spring window. But I do think there's an element to it that, you know, at some point, it just is what it is. And if you're a player, I'm going to go, and you would think they would keep a lot of that same system as best they can, but you never know. But they'll have the spring window for me. But coaches are going to move. Players can, like, for the most part, they can move freely all the time anyway. I mean, if it's a few days later, I don't like it, but it's kind of the crappiest part of the system because.
I guess then you'd say where would it end too? Because if Ohio State hires a new DC tomorrow, then that opens another window for somebody else, and then they open another window. So
yeah,
I think that's
at some point there's a line.
It's a good point. Yeah, I just it does
stink. It does. It's not good.
Stink for kids. Yeah, because they already only got one shot at this stuff, but. I am, Brent, I'm super excited, man, to talk about the draft. Like, this is something I did for...
All right. Before we get to the draft, I was going to ask you.
Go ahead.
What do you think of the Super Bowl matchup? And because it's kind of college, NFL segue with the draft. Are you looking forward to Chiefs-Eagles part two?
Part two? Listen, I understand the Chiefs hate. And I have always been one to cheer against success. I just find it hard to root against Patrick Mahomes. And I don't know why, Brent, but it's hard because I feel like, you know, it's been the different cast of characters, but he's just going to make the play. And it's like, how is he going to do it? Is he going to do it running? Is he going to do it with a sidearm flip? Is he going to throw it left-handed? Like, he's going to do something crazy. And it's like, it's almost a matter of if, or, you know, and when it's going to happen. And that's, I mean, Josh Allen has been ridiculous. Like, the dude has been insane, and he's got one problem. He's got one problem. He doesn't have 99. Yep. He's got one problem, and his name's Patrick Mahomes. Like, he just can't beat that guy. And them having Andy Reid and Spagnuolo, like, it's not fair. I mean, talk about the best OC and DC punch in the game, like, crazy punch. And I marvel at Spags and watching him call plays and – they were in one corner blitz in that game, and it was the fourth down conversion.
Yep.
The fourth down play, the biggest play of the game. And it's just fun to watch him do his thing and Andy Reid design plays late in the game when you're supposed to run and run the clock out. Like, Andy Reid throws the football. Like, there's just something about it it's kind of intoxicating. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch the GOAT. I guess it's fun to watch the best that's ever done it at a spot. Like,
we are in the midst of greatness. And it's much what's amazing to me about sports at the highest level. And like, we see this in tennis, we see it in, you know, basketball, where they'll have two or three in a row. Now, maybe not recently, but for the most part, and you'll see all these just sort of dynasties or teams like that in a world where all these people do is train for and think about that one thing. There's always usually one or two or three people that are just better than everybody else. And right now, the combo of Mahomes, Spags, and Reed is just better than everybody else. Now, we'll say one thing. The where we are located in this part of the country in Georgia, there will probably be a lot of Philadelphia fans and rooting for the fact
that
there are six Georgia players on that roster. And the other thing, I think Philadelphia will not have the same problem that Buffalo had in that they have no issue putting Saquon on the field all the time and giving him the rock all the time, whereas Buffalo said, all right, James Cook, you're killing them. We're only going to leave you on the field like half the time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That won't be a problem. But I just hope a great game. Like, when I have zero rooting interest, give me a great game.
Yeah, and it's funny, Brent, because, like, I literally remember calling Texas Tech games with Patrick Mahomes and sitting down with him and just, like, marveling at his arm talent. But, like, it wasn't all there. Like, it didn't all connect, and he put up numbers. Oh, maybe it's the system. Like, you know, what is it? And then Andy Reid sees it, trades up. And I just think draft season, like, we're going to find some of these guys every year. Josh Allen, that kind of not the first Lamar Jackson, not the first, second, third quarterback a lot of times taken in their class, but there's something about them. And this is what I love about drafts and teams. Like, we can get all the arm lengths and all the 40s and all this boo crap, because you know how I feel about that. There's also something about people that just understand the game of football. and it's ingrained in them. They feel it. They just find a way to make plays, and it's insane. And there's a lot of guys like that that's going to be in this draft that might not meet those measurements, might not say X, Y, and Z, but you're going to look up a couple years from now, and they're going to be one of the better players in the league. And that's why it's hard to be a GM. That's why it's hard to do that job, because a lot of times height, weight, speed do translate to the next level, and you need those things. But there's always that stuff inside, and there's not a way to measure this heart. And I think that's always the fun part about it.
Speaking of that, picking players, going to the draft, the NFL draft season is upon us. So we had the opportunity to talk to Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, and you'll see that and hear that at the end. But one thing I wanted to say about, just when folks listen to that, he talks about sort of college football and the schedule. And I think it was a little clip I saw earlier, like somebody might misconstrue what he's saying as he's protecting his game. No, he's looking out for the players. Like this is 100% him looking out in the players, but the blend of both the college football season and the draft and prepping for the draft and putting these kids in the best position they can be to succeed in the draft. But got a lot of draft storylines. And I wrote down four and see what you think of or in your thoughts on these. So first off, I think this is the first time in a while that we've had some uncertainty at number one overall. Who would you take? Like, you kind of maybe hinted at it a little bit ago.
I don't have any uncertainty.
You don't have any uncertainty, but
I don't have any uncertainty. And guess what? The combine's not going to change that. And, you know, Brent, watching Abdul Carter for Penn State, who dons the number 11 for a reason, right? Like that's the number at Penn State when you're that dude. I've seen him in his whole career, Brent, but probably the most impressive thing to me was he gets hurt against Boise in the playoffs. And then I think with all that on the line, could have easily said, nah, bro, I'm not going to play. Like, or was it SMU that he got hurt? It was SMU that he got hurt, wasn't it? SMU. He could have easily said, no, I'm not going to play against Notre Dame. I might be the number one overall pick. I watched him rush the passer over and over. Watching that tape, Brent, I watched him rush the passer over and over, and he used one arm.
Yeah.
And he still won. Like, he's just scratching the surface of his talent and what he can be. And there might not be a franchise quarterback. And listen, all teams are looking for quarterbacks. And I can give you a list. I wrote them down today of teams that are like – they're looking for quarterbacks, and quarterback is the most important position in football. There's no doubt about it. There's also a lot to be said for guys that get quarterbacks on the ground. And
yes,
that's a really important position. And I think if we're talking about the guy who does his craft the best in this draft, I'm not taking any of these quarterbacks over number 11. Like, I'm riding with Abdul Carter, and it's not debatable for me. And the first pick is the Tennessee Titans, who you could argue might need a quarterback.
Yes. And that's, so speaking of, so that was number two, QBs, where they go, how much do they get over and or under drafted? If you just look at the top 10, I would say I got five of the top 10 that definitively kind of need one. Tennessee at one, Cleveland at two, New York Giants at three, Raiders at six.
Raiders and Jets.
Jets at seven. Those are the ones in the top 10 that I think are sort of in as a need. So is there a clear cut guy for you just before looking at any really truly breaking this down like we're going to do? Or
first of all, they're going to overpay for the quarterback spot. They're going to overdraft. That's what we do, bro. Like, it's going to happen. So it's not a matter of if, it's when. Here's what I'll say, Brent. I don't have a single quarterback for me. I might take one in the top seven. If you're gonna
get, I got one.
One is, there's only one guy that I might touch, because literally watching him, he's got so many discernible traits that are fun and that are really, really good. And it's Cam Ward to me. I don't know if it's the same guy for you, but like,
no, it is. His physical talent is dwarfs anyone else, I think.
Yeah, you're talking about ball coming off the hand, like it comes off the hand. Plenty of arm strength, can throw all the routes. Is he a perfect prospect? No, But does he have also the second element of that? By the way, who's playing in the Super Bowl? Patrick Mahomes. The second play is harder to play than the first. Jalen Hurts. The second play is harder to play than the first. You've seen the NFL shift. It used to be, well, first it started in college, right? Like, no. You can't run your quarterback. He'll get hurt. Then you went, nah, bro. Like, we're going to pound our quarterbacks. We get the plus one in the run game, run the RPOs off of it. It's it continued to evolve. Well, the NFL realizes it. Like, if I'm going to take these quarterbacks, I need to use them what they're best at. Like, the first thing they're best at is what they ran in college. Most systems are very run-oriented, like with the quarterback spot and RPO-oriented. And guess what? It's an easy way to take a quarterback and say, hey, as you develop, Brent, I can run you. As you develop, I can get clearly defined looks. And so that's why I think these guys – so I'll let you talk about Cam Ward some, but that's why I think these guys are – more and more valuable, and you've seen like teams are not even batting an eye now to go to the guys with mobility because of what they gain.
Well, it's you think about just the traditional dropback QB. If they're not, if they struggle as a rookie or a rookie second, whatever, early in their career, we'll say early in the career, if they struggle in that regard, and that's really all that they bring to the table, your floor is now lowered immensely. But much like we saw with the quarterback that's in the Super Bowl, one of the quarterbacks in the Super Bowl, Jalen Hurts, his ability as a runner early in his career let him develop as a passer, but it was still a high floor. I can win games with this for the Eagles. And that run ability, which by the way, he had the one on the screen, Cam Ward has to me that most people look at as potentially QB1 or QB2, I don't think has at all, is, and that's Shador, like that's the big separator, is that you get a floor raising component of that as much as you get potentially the ceiling, because like you said about Mahomes, by the way, do you remember who they traded with to get Mahomes?
Who'd they trade with?
That would be the Buffalo Bills.
But also
the last 24 Super Bowls for the AFC, four guys: Brady, Mahomes, Manning, Roethlisberger. Like, you've got to get in. Like, the AFC's not, you know, Allen is there, Lamar is there. You've got to have, like, if you're the Titans, you better believe this guy can go play and win against those guys, because it's just a gauntlet.
Brent, here's a heck of an idea. Don't draft him. Like, don't overdraft. Yeah. I know we're all looking for a quarterback, but like, so many times we see it in every draft where they stretch and they want this to be somebody. But it's interesting you mentioned Hurts. Hurts is still not a finished product. And Hurts still lacks a lot of the necessary components in the passing game. Like, if you watch Hurts, consistently there are guys open. He doesn't throw in rhythm. He doesn't throw on time. Now, he'll have moments. You saw again, A.J. Brown ball up the sideline. Deep ball was fantastic on third and long, that when they needed to have it, like, great passes, but he's still not an elite passer. But guess what? I can still be really, really good with him, and I can use what he has to broach that gap. And I can get a Saquon Barkley now who's dynamic, and Jalen goes this way, he goes that way. Got to commit to the run game. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, I get one-on-ones. Like, and Hurts is a great player. He is not one of the elite passers in the National Football League. He's not.
No.
And the Cam Ward – he has that ability to be great passing the football. He has the ability to feel. He has the ability to throw the different routes. But he's also got that magic and that ability to never be in a hurry, to play fast but never be in a hurry. You watch him, dude. I can't tell how many clips that I'm thinking he took the red pill and he's in the Matrix. Like, he's just.
Yep. I will say, mentioned with the team part of it, he's probably somebody, though, that it's better to be good around him initially. Like all these, I think all the guys in this draft, it's not a, hey, put them in a situation and they're going to go succeed. Like, they're not Jaden Daniels. You're not going to drop these guys in that situation and they're just going to be great no matter what. I don't think. You never know. But I don't think so.
But if you're drafting in the top 10,
you're probably not very good.
Those teams suck for a reason. Like, those teams are there. Like, those teams you just mentioned with the Giants, the Raiders, the Jets, the Browns, the Titans, like, they're there for a reason, right? And they aren't great around him. And that's why some of these quarterbacks that continue to to fall a little bit later, a la Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen. Like these guys that are balling and killing it, they fall a little bit later in the draft, but they go to better teams. And like that could be one of these things for Shador. I think he's going to go in the top 15. I do. I think it's going to be a reach with whoever takes him. I like Shador's accuracy. Like he can throw a football, man.
He's the best thrower of the football, I think. I agree.
He can sling it. He buys enough time. He actually does scramble a good bit, but his scrambling isn't scrambling that's going to like transfer to the next level. Like
no.
He's not going to run away from the next level freaks. He can run away from, you know, guys that are chasing him in the Big 12. Like he does a good enough job.
Solid.
He does a solid job of buying time. Here's what I'll say every time I watch Shador, Brent, and here's my fatal flaw for him. I think all great quarterbacks to me have the ability to go through the progressions. He does throw accurately. He does. I think good quarterbacks have the ability to step up and make plays. And he too many time for me, Brent, he does this. He turns out, he spins out, he runs out, he runs backwards, takes a big loss, runs backwards, yeah. Tries to outrun people. Like I just would love to see him step up in the pocket more. And that's something that I would be working on big time. And I'm saying like, I got to do this. I've got to be able to step up and make throws and make plays because he's got the arm and he's got the accuracy, but to be able to negotiate the pressure and stuff, it's a big part of being successful at that next level.
And the arm is one where it's good, but not great. Like it's not going to be a upper echelon guy.
But it's not going to be a deal breaker either.
No, I agree with that.
It's not something that you say he can't play because of his arm.
All right. So I'm going to read off some names. Tell me who becomes my guy, an early my guy for you. So Will Howard, Jalen Milroe, Riley Leonard, Quinn Ewers, Kyle McCord, Jackson Dart, Dylan Gabriel.
You know where I'm going. You should know where I'm going.
I mean, I think you're probably going to go Will Howard.
Yes.
Given the run that he just had in the playoffs.
I mean, you talked about it, like who could get hot and you talked about Will Howard in the playoffs and he did. And he's another guy that has the ability to run the football. He's big and strong, a la Ben Roethlisberger, that he can also shrug people off. But I saw him make plays in the pocket. I saw him making plays outside the pocket. Is he an A-plus arm? No, he's not. Absolutely not. But I did see enough of that stuff that it makes me go, like, I like it. And I don't think it's finished by any stretch. And I don't think this list is anything that – it's not like – last year we had five top
– Six.
What?
Six top, of the top 12. Picks?
Like six of the top 12. 12. Like that's not going to happen. And these guys, there's not a single quarterback on this list that I would have above those guys last year.
I agree.
I mean, think about that. Like that, not a single one. And that tells you this class is obviously a few steps backwards than last year's class, but the top guys are going to go high. And I think who are the top guys that are going to go high? Can Will Howard be one of those guys that, and I do love the swag, by the way, because he's got that little, he'll wink at you. He'll get the crowd involved. I like the Will Howard leadership and swag that he showed. I like how he came into a new environment in year one and said, I got this. I'm the leader. I like when they lost, Coach Day talked about Will Howard, when they lost their center, you know, in practice, he said literally like Will Howard, that practice circled him up and was like, bro, let's go. We got to move on. Like this sucks. And we're all upset, but let's keep this main thing, the main thing. And so I like those intangibles, the big, strong. What did Bill Parcells always talk about with the draft? He always talked about experience, multiple years as a starter. Bo Nix comes in multiple years as a starter. Jaden Daniels comes in multiple years as a starter. Like, I think that's always made a difference because you've seen so much of the success you've seen so many defenses and you got that catalog in your head. Like, okay, I've seen it. I kind of know how to handle this, as opposed to the first time you see it, you're drinking out of a fire hose.
Yep. We'll get to probably as we move forward and
who was your guy?
Honestly, I don't really want to pick any of them at this point.
You don't want to pick a single QB.
No, I think this ends up being very 22-esque, 2022, where like it had Kenny Pickett in round one, and that ended up not being a good deal. And then the next one was like Ritter, I think, in the third round. I feel like this might be one, two, and then you don't see anybody again until like the fourth round, just because of the depth at other positions. And speaking of other positions, point number three, running backs do matter. And there's a whole lot of them in this draft that are good.
Okay, I'm turning this back on you.
Okay.
They do matter. At what price?
Well, for every Saquon or Bijan or Jahmyr Gibbs, you've got a Kyren Williams or Bucky Irving that you get in the fourth round. You've got a James Cook that you get in the second round. So it's going to be a what's your flavor? How much do you like the individual? But in terms of depth, it is a where could you get a just as good of a player, or not necessarily just as good, but a really, really good player in round mid-round two versus mid-round one? Yes. Round four that could be highly productive for you versus round three? Yes. Like Trevor Etienne had a great day at the Senior Bowl today. Might be somebody that goes and just has a really good run. Like there's 10, 15, 20 backs in this draft that, to me, could start on teams.
Which is exactly why I'm not drafting one high. Like that's the whole point. And yes, it has great depth. But like, if I can get all of these guys, A, I get them cheaper, which is not a bad thing.
Right.
B, more importantly, I think I get other positions of need that have higher value at their spot, because there's going to be a big decline at other spots. Like there's going to be upper echelon of talent, and then there's going to go. Running backs, the list is so long and deep. It's almost like, to me, it's like my fantasy football draft. I'm going to be like, okay, they took one. Well, the difference between one and 20 isn't that great. Okay, there's two gone. There's three gone. Okay, I'll start getting nervous when there's 17 gone. You know what I'm saying? Like,
by the way,
why am I going to waste a high pick on a running back?
I love your nerdiness and positional value and GM skills there. That was very impressive. I didn't even mention Dylan Sampson, Travion Henderson.
So there's one guy to me that is above all the rest that's going to be taken in the first round. One guy.
Genty.
Yeah. And Genty, because his explosive nature, he did not play. Yes. He did not play the elite competition. He also did not play behind an elite offensive line. That dude broke 75 tackles to go 70 yards. You know, I think his playmaking with his squatty body, with his contact balance, with his quickness, with his character, I think he's that guy that you go, okay, what did Spencer tell us about on this? He was like, oh, he had a players only meeting, into camp because it wasn't going the way we want it to go. So I think it's Genty, and I keep seeing him to the Cowboys, by the way, in a lot of these drafts, and that just makes me laugh.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Going to Dallas would be something. After hiring Schottenheimer, who was at our Christmas party a couple years ago. But that's my only guy that I think goes in round one.
All right. So last thing, and this is going to be fun because I think we're going to really dive into this a lot because you might have a little bit of expertise in this area, but the D-line talent, the top heavy, elite D-line talent in this draft, both in the interior and on the edge, is I think they, if you had to pick a positional group, if you just said, if D-line could be a positional group, I don't even have to specify interior versus edge if you're, placing wagers on those things. But that would be one for me where it's like, okay, these guys are going to be all kinds of drafted high. And what's amazing about it from the college perspective is it's not just one guy. It's multiple guys from all these teams like Michigan, Ohio State, Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss, A&M that we talked about all season long, having these dominant defensive lines that you're going to see top 50 picks on multiple guys from these teams.
One thing I'm going to go ahead and throw on a limb and say this too, Brett, about the draft before we get into that. I think the days where we saw Georgia destroy this first round, Alabama destroy the first round, Ohio State destroy the first round and put six, seven guys, those are done. Not going to happen anymore because the talent is spread out to me. It's just, it's going to continue to be that way. We can also go down the list too and talk about, Travis Hunter is the second ranked player transferred. Cam Ward, third ranked player transferred. You're going to go down those lists of guys that didn't stay with their school, a lot of them. And so, but the defensive talent is big. I think, Brent, I don't know the numbers of this, and I couldn't find it. You probably could because you're better at that kind of stuff than me. I think we're going to have a lot more defensive players drafted in the first round than offensive players. And I don't I don't know how many times that happens, but you just got a ton of, and listen, you're seeing it in the NFL. Chris Jones makes the Chiefs elite. And then you add Karlaftis and those other guys around him.
McDuffie.
Jalen Carter, bringing him into the mix.
And
like
Nolan Smith Eagles. Now.
Nolan Smith starting to click. And like, you've got to have those guys that are on the perimeter. And again, the more the game becomes more quarterback, you know, run game and quarterback scrambling, you better have guys that can catch them, right? Like, you've got to have those big, strong guys. And the defensive tackle spot is the spot. Like, that's going to be the place where, I mean, you see some quick twitch suckers that are big and huge and strong, which is really, really good. But I went through today and I think, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. I think there'll be 17 to 20 plus defensive players taken in the first round.
And which completely flips from last year. Like last year, what was like the 15th pick, maybe? I think that was the first defensive player taken. Stupid. I mean, you had just generational talent on the offensive side, like Hall of Fame, almost borderline level talent on the offensive side of the ball last year. It flips this year. And that might be one where you just say, hey, I'm going to draft line of scrimmage this year. QB's okay, fine. If I absolutely have to or need them need it in the worst way, fine. But yeah, this is very much where line of scrimmage is going to dominate this draft. One guy for me who's lower on the consensus board, which by the way, so consensus board takes a look at all the guys that do the draft and do their boards and comes up with an average. One that's lower than he should be to me on these boards is Walter Nolan. I think like he's in the 20, like in the, you know, early 20s. I think he's a top 10 player in this draft and should go in the top 10 in this draft. So that's one.
So who's the consensus that we're talking to? Like, who are the people they use?
I've got Dane Brugler, Daniel Jeremiah, Kuiper, Scouts, which is McShay, Matt Miller, who does ESPN, PFF, Renner, who used to do for PFF. So you take a bunch of these people who literally do drafts like the entirety of their, that's their job. Then you average it out. And that's like, if you look at GMs and how they should look at the draft, you've got to understand that, hey, this guy on the consensus board is here. You know, and why, you know, you better really like him if you're going to pick him way ahead of where he's slotted by everybody else kind of thing.
Yeah. Yep. I think another interesting player, and then we'll wrap it up and get to Jim Nagy. I think one thing that's very interesting is Brock Bowers last year, his success in the National Football League, tearing it up, Ty Warren, and what that means for him. You don't have a lot of receivers at the top of this draft that are, like you've seen in the past, that are super complete and that are, you know, fast, twitch, can run great routes, catch the ball. I mean, you got a few, and I think McMillan is a freak show, and he's, you know, he's incredible. If you didn't watch him at Arizona, we'll get you some of his stats and stuff. Like, just insane, really, really good. But I wouldn't be surprised if Ty Warren is the first receiver slash tight end taken, which, you know, you argue maybe last year could have happened with Bowers because the way he went and dominated the football game. You know, it's not as much to me about receivers anymore. Like, tight ends can impact the game because the ability to split them out in the slot. But you also get that advantage because how do you want to play them? I can clearly see your defense. How are you taking away the tight end? Okay, how are you covering him? Is it a backer? Is it a dime package? You want to bring in another DB? Okay, I'll smash you in the face. Like, if you want to bring in a linebacker, okay, I can beat him in man-to-man coverage consistently. So I think the chess piece that is the tight ends and Bauer's success, a guy like Ty Warren, who's a football-playing Jesse, and I'll take him 10 days out of 10 days, I want him on my squad. He's a guy that might benefit from that.
And what's the consensus board that we just mentioned? He's like 17th, but the range in terms of 17th. where he's at on draft boards, like he's fifth on Jeremiah's draft board, but then he'll there's somebody the that has 10. somebody has
Ty Warren will go in the top 10. Like he has to go. So he has to go in the top 10. Like I just, and again, if he wasn't so great after the catch, we could have this conversation, but a guy that can block like he can block, catch like he can catch, he ain't short. That dude's like, no. I'll be interested to see it combines too, but he's 6'5", 6'6". Like that's a big target and he does not drop football. So that'll be interesting. But you got anything else before we get to Jim Nagy's interview?
One quick question. Did you see any of the stuff from the Senior Bowl and the measurements? Because there's one that kind of stood out already more so than any other.
Is it short arms?
Different, same.
Because that will be a different, that will be a different pod, and I'll be pissed off when you start doing that. Different
hand
limb?
Size. Same hand size. I said same. Jalen Milroe, less than 8 3/4 inches. Like nine's usually Burger, like the.
You remember the Burger King commercial? Small hands.
Like, and what's interesting when you see that measurement and how he throws the football, it's because of that. And there it is right there. Like he doesn't take it around like the traditional sort of C motion that you see. I think because of the hand size. Now you see that. I thought it was just more of his own just being ripped upness, but no, like you have to. Yeah. And all the fumbles he had in his career, like
he had a lot.
That's going to be an issue. The accuracy. He's going
to
be.
They're going to talk about cold weather teams being taken off the table because it gets cold. It gets harder to grip a football. So, yeah. Like all of that, we'll get plenty.
They're there and they're working out the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, so we'll get Jim. I see that. We're going to get Field Yates on Thursday, but Senior Bowl. You're right. We caught up with Jim Nagy a couple days ago, and I thought he was really, really good, and it provided some insight I've never even heard about with the Senior Bowl that. How they work with teams and stuff. So you guys take a listen. Stadium behind you, which is awesome because it's football and we get to talk more football because more football for me and Brent is fantastic. But I also see that toboggan on your lid and I hear there's some snow down there. So I want to know the weather forecast down there for the Senior Bowl.
Well, good to be on with you guys. Yeah, it was a historic weather event here in Mobile this week. We had 7 inches of snow, broke the all-time record from 1895. So when you're breaking records from horse and buggy days, that's a big deal. So it is. Thank God, you know. Thank God Mother Nature has helped us out. We don't have plows down here. We don't have sand trucks down here. We've had some nice weather, and really my biggest concern was, can we paint the field and take care of our sponsors, which I know you guys can appreciate. And thank God we're able to do that.
Yeah, so, no, Jim, that's cool. Go ahead, Brent.
I was going to say, so in terms of everything looking forward to this week, like one, how was your blood pressure with all the snow? But two, everything's sort of good to go, set up now good for the game this week, or practice and then the game?
It's good, man. I mean, we lost 2 full days in the office as a staff, you know, and we don't have a huge staff. There's only 10 of us in the office. So in this time of year, especially like we're all wearing different hats and it's a very collaborative process to, you know, get this thing done. Like right now we're moving the equipment out to the stadium today. That would have been done, you know, a couple of days ago. So it put us behind a little bit, but we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. We've got a great staff. Everyone's been working hard. We've had the same group together for a number of years now, so everyone knows what to do. But just being away was difficult for a couple of days this week.
Well, the current hat you're wearing is a beanie because it's cold. But when you're talking about like the expansion process of the playoffs and now more rounds, like how did that affect the Senior Bowl, man? Like guys that are like they played like 6 days ago. Like how did that affect you guys?
Yeah, it did affect us. We thought it would, you know, we hoped it wouldn't, but thought it would, I guess is the best way to say it. We had this same turnaround window back in 2019 when the Joe Burrow team, when they played Clemson. And between those two teams, I think we had 8 guys, you know, play on Monday and show up in Mobile on Sunday. I think we had 8 guys and I think 4 of them were top 100 picks. So, but the difference was that was those teams' 13th game, not their 16th game. So as you guys know, as you know, from a player's perspective, I mean, 3 more games of pounding three straight weeks. I mean, these guys basically just played an old NFL season, 16 games. So we did. We lost all the Ohio State guys. That was a bummer. We got three Notre Dame guys coming. We lost a couple Penn State guys. So, yeah, unfortunately, we're not represented by those teams. I mean, they should be here. And really, you know, the players are the ones that suffer. You know, like talking to Jack Sawyer this week, he really wanted to be here. Talking to Will Howard, like Will Howard knew is as good a playoff run as Will Howard had. He knew that this would have been a great forum for him, right? Like he's a really good leader. He connects with teammates, all the stuff the NFL decision makers want to see from our quarterbacks. So it's really not fair to them. So I'll be curious to see if college football, you know, adjust their schedule a little bit. I know this week there was some talk about because of TV ratings, and I think we all know that drives the bus. And I don't know, maybe it's too, you know, one year's maybe not the right sample size to make a knee-jerk reaction to this. But I think, you know, I think we'll also talk to the NFL in the offseason as well and see if maybe if we push back, then maybe the combine pushes back. But we can't push back unless the combine pushes back because these guys still need a time frame between the Senior Bowl and the combine to get ready to do that. So it's interesting. It's certainly a new dynamic, but we're, you know, we always got to be able to adjust.
What do you think is best in terms of schedule wise with to keep all of it together as one maybe cohesive unit from college to the NFL?
Yeah, I think the college thing could be done a little sooner. You know, I know a lot of, I've read a lot of things online where it's been floated. How cool would it be if the championship game were the Rose Bowl every year? I saw that a couple times on social media this week, and you ended it on January 1st. I don't know, you know, you just don't take any time off from the regular season and play. But I do know this from like an NFL standpoint, being in draft rooms for almost a couple decades, that month of April, man, it is like hay's in the barn time. Like you go in and you're in the office every day, all day for the entire month of April. And you get to like the middle of the month and you're like, okay, let's do this. You know, like we've seen all these guys, we've met all these guys, we have the medical stuff where, you know, so you get a little antsy. So there is some wiggle room. I feel like if we moved back to the middle of February and the combine moved back to the middle of March, and then you had pro days going until the middle of April, and then you had like two more weeks to go back in the office and digest, you know, the spring process, I think that would be enough. So, but we'll see. I mean, I'm sure those conversations are going to be had this offseason.
So that leads me to a great discussion with your history and obviously Jim Nagy joining us from the executive director of the Senior Bowl. You talked about being in draft rooms. So when you look at your history as a scout, you were with the Patriots in the early 2000s there, and there was this guy who was a high motor player from Georgia. What did you, you know, this Pollock guy that ended up going in the first round of the Bengals, what was your draft take there? Was that in your scouting report back in the day?
I do remember the conversations about David because we drew a lot of parallels to one of the best players on our team, and that was Teddy Bruschi. You know, we just felt like they were similar guys. So, yeah, we really like David. I mean, we look for versatile football players and, you know, and smart football players. That's the one thing. I mean, I worked in New England. I worked in Seattle. You know, we valued different things, you know, at the different places. But, you know, when I look back on my Patriot time, we really, you know, smart football players and versatile football players. That's what we stressed. And you know, that was David, man. He could get to the quarterback from a lot of different alignments. He had a, you know, he was kind of a tweener, but, you know, we saw tweener as a good thing. You know, Teddy was a tweener, and he's one of the all-time greatest Patriots ever, you know. So, I can't remember what grade we had on David, but we certainly spent a lot of time talking about him, and we liked him.
Hey, I'll take the Teddy Bruschi comparison any day. That's a great comparison. Thank you, yeah.
That's a compliment.
Heck yeah, it is. This process, like the Senior Bowl process, like how do you get guys here? What do you look at? Why does the Senior Bowl exist?
Well, it's a great platform. It has been. I mean, we're going on year 76 here in Mobile, so it's, you know, it's been here a long time. It's been the game that the NFL has always been the most invested in. We've had the coaching staffs, the NFL guys coaching our players for this whole time. And we had full coaching staffs up until a couple of years ago. Now we've got a new format. We have a collection of younger coaches from non-playoff teams, which is a really cool developmental opportunity for those guys. But the biggest thing is, I say this all the time, I'm not trying to like disparage, you know, scouts, because that was me forever. But, you know, the difference between the Senior Bowl and like when you were playing at Georgia, was there a lot of foot traffic through Georgia? 100%. Did you get seen by a ton of scouts? Absolutely. But you know, the guys that didn't see you when you came out was most of the GMs and all of the head coaches. And the important thing is those are going to really be the guys making the picks in April. So, you know, I tell all these players, like, that's a big deal, guys. Like, I know if you went to an Alabama or a Michigan or Ohio State, like, you went out to practice every day and there were dudes with NFL logos on their chest. But it wasn't the guys that are going to be making the picks in April. And that's it. I think what gets lost is those guys are just normal people, too. Right. I mean, I think all of us, regardless of what we do in our lives, we want to surround ourselves with people we're familiar with. And for these head coaches and GMs, and they all come here, you know, to be down on the practice field and see these guys compete. It's very powerful. It's very I know as a scout, it's a lot easier to sell a player in a draft room when the head coach and the GM have spent time around him as well. It's a lot easier to get buy-in on those guys. And then the other thing I say to the players, man, like, you're making a statement. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of agents right now that are telling their guys not to come to Mobile and play in the Senior Bowl and don't get hurt and all that stuff. I get it. So I'll tell those guys tomorrow night at orientation, like, you've made a statement just by being here. And when you talk to NFL teams right now, and if you really boil it down to, like, what are you trying to learn in these next 3 months? They're trying to figure out who really loves this. And you guys know, like, not all players love playing football. Some do it because they're good at it. Some do it because it's
the things that come with it.
Yeah, the thing that they love the stuff that comes with it. They don't love the game. So again, I think that's really powerful too. You show up in Mobile and you compete your tail off for a week in front of these guys. That resonates with these teams. They know you're wired the right way.
So speaking of that, the NIL world now and how things are changing in that regard, is that something you guys are seeing in the scouting process where it's like, hey, this guy 1 year to the next, maybe he got paid a little bit and the effort doesn't look the greatest, or, you know, the conversations that you have with teams, how is it important to the teams? How has that changed just the entirety of the scouting process, including what goes on with your game?
No, it's a great question. People ask about NIL all the time. I'll say this, going back to what my last statement about the NFL boiling it down, trying to find guys that love football. The old question, like when David came out, you know, the biggest question that we all had was like, are these guys mature enough to handle it? Like, the NFL is a hard lifestyle, man. So, like, you get more money and a lot more money in your pocket. You know, you become a millionaire overnight, basically. And most of these guys haven't had a lot, you know, come from a background where they've had a lot of money. And then you have a lot more time on your hands than you do in college. You're not going to class every day. So
thank God.
That's what. That's what teams used to have to try to figure out. Now, because of NIL, you know, you're reaching out to people with the collective to see how, responsive players were, how responsible they were. You know, you talk to people inside the building, how are they with the money? Like, has it affected their work ethic? So the teams are they're more able to drill down on those questions than they ever were. So now that's why the pivot now is like, who really loves it? So it has changed it. The movement, the portal, the NIL, in some ways, it's made the scouting process easier because now you're seeing guys now they're in multiple buildings. You're not just going to Athens and asking one group of people that have been around David Pollack, you know, what's David like? You're going into you're going into two, sometimes three buildings. So you've got all this information, way more information about these players and that's beneficial. And then you see the guys sometimes playing different schemes, and that's really important too. And again, that's value of the Senior Bowl. Like, we'll try these guys at different positions they haven't played in college, whether it's on the O-line or the defensive backfield, even on the D-line. I mean, we move these guys around. So, and now you're seeing that in college. You know, I mean, you look at some of these guys, they transfer two or three times. They've been used differently at all their spots. So really, it's kind of cleaned up the evaluation process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think with money too, Jim, like, you're always projecting, like, how are they going to handle it when they get money? Like, how will they handle that? Well, a lot of these kids, they already got it. Like,
they got it.
Now you absolutely already know, so that makes it easier. Who's the guy, Jim, or maybe a couple guys, and I'll give you a couple seconds to think about it, but, like, that just showed up and you were like, holy cow. Like, hadn't heard a lot about him, or maybe that wasn't the first or second guy that you invited to the combine. Like, I think about a guy like last year, like Ladd McConkey. Like, we didn't see him in the game, obviously, but you saw his – route running, and everybody was like, oh my goodness. And it obviously can drastically improve your draft stock. Like, who are some guys over the years, man, that have just stuck out as difference makers or, you know, leaders or whatever, just guys in the past that we would all know?
Yeah, that's a great question. It happens every year. You know, you kind of get again, we put so much work into scouting this thing, guys. So like, I never really, it's not guys we don't know about. I mean, it's our job to know them. But you get surprised. I'll go back to my first year. We had Terry McLaurin in the game. And if you guys remember, Terry McLaurin was the number two wideout at Ohio State behind Paris Campbell. And, you know, he had some production, but, you know, we do calls with NFL teams after our scouting staff gets done, you know, doing our work, which is usually around Halloween every year. We start feeling good about where the board's at. You know, then I'll use my relationships back in the league. And this year we did it with 14 teams. I try to get it around half the league every year. And they're great, man. They share their grades. I mean, you know, sometimes teams will tell us specifically, like, we've got, you know, 2 5s, a 6, and a 7 on this guy. Some teams might be like, yeah, Jim, like, we've got all mid-round stuff on this guy. So it varies from team to team. But I only bring that up because when Terry McLaurin came out, like, he was at the bottom of our wideout stack. He was one of the last wideouts we invited. All the teams had him in like the 5th and the 6th round. And the reason I loved him was you saw him as a gunner on punt team. Now, this is a senior gunner.
Yep.
And he's going down there. He's a starter. He's on punt team. And he's busting his ass. And that's where you saw the speed. The dude could fly, right? Well, you know, Paris Campbell doesn't come to the Senior Bowl. He declines his invite. Terry comes and nobody can cover him. He's the fastest player in the game on our GPS stuff. So you knew he was going to go to Indy and run really fast, which he did. And he ended up being a 3rd-round pick. If you're a Power 5 player, now a Power 4 player, and you move, you know, 2 or 3 rounds in the pre-draft process, that is a massive, massive jump. So, but now in hindsight, look at it. Terry should have been like a top 15 pick. And if you look back at last year, Ladd McConkey maybe should have been a top 15 pick. And then the other guy I'll bring up quickly is Quinn Meinerz, who just got voted first team all pro this year by the Denver Broncos. He was really one of the guys in my 6 years, you know, I'm in year 7 now, that I really went against the grain. The NFL had PFA priority free agent grades on Quinn Meinerz. He's, you know, a Division III kid from Wisconsin Whitewater. It was the COVID year. Division III football just completely canceled that year. So he was in Dallas with Duke Manyweather, who's a great offensive line training guy. And he was trained with Rashawn Slater, who ended up, you know, now he's a pro bowler for the San Diego or LA Chargers. And Duke kept sending me videos of these two guys working out side by side, you know, and one would take a rep, then the next guy would take a rep, and they'd get out on a pole. And I, you know, and I'm like, man, this isn't like drastically different here. So we invited Quinn kind of against the, you know, recommendations of the league. And he kicked ass. He kicked ass down here. You know, he ended up going in the 3rd round of the draft. He went from really like a free agent to 3rd round. And now in hindsight, now he's a first team all pro guard. He probably should have been a 1st round pick. But again, to go from priority free agent, Division III kid who's blocking guys that look like me, to, you know, coming down here and going against SEC dudes every rep. I mean, it was impactful. I still remember that year with Quinn. It was incredible what he did.
Jim, you're still allowed to call them the San Diego Chargers. It's allowed. It should have never changed. That's cool, man. I didn't even know that. So you guys work closely with the NFL and basically understand exactly kind of where these guys are at and how they're looked at before they even come in.
Yeah. David, like, it's important that we do our own work. Like, there wasn't a real football operation here when I got here. Like, they didn't even have tape in the office. So, like, that was a whole process, too. I had to call the league office, and they're like, Jim, we don't give All-Star Games tape. And I said, well, how do you expect me to do my job? Like, what are we talking about here? So we got tape the first year. We built out a scouting staff of former NFL scouts. This year we had 11 former NFL scouts on our staff, and they're, you know, we don't have a huge budget, but they're at games every weekend. Like, we had 2 former Panther scouts, and they were down at Athens a bunch. We had a former Jag scout in Jacksonville. He went up to Athens too. So we had great coverage, and we do our own work, and it's really important. But this game is for the teams. I mean, I feel like we work for the 32 clubs. I don't want to bring guys here that they don't want to see. So it worked hand in hand. And they, you know, they respect our process. They respect that we've got guys that have been there, done that in the league. So, you know, sometimes we're higher than a team or lower, and I give those teams great feedback. If we get on the call, especially like for the later calls, if I'm talking to team like 11, 12, 13, 14, and we've already spoken to, you know, 10 or 11 teams, and we get to a player and they're like, Jim, we've got him as a free agent. I'll tell them, like, I won't say specific teams, but I'll be like, guys, you're low. you know, the rest of the league's got this guy in the fourth or fifth round. You might want to get another set of eyeballs on this guy. So it's really like a cool give and take on those calls. I think the teams appreciate it, that we're giving them giving them a voice in what we do. And why wouldn't we? I mean, it doesn't make sense to not reach out to the guys in the league and ask for their opinion.
That's awesome. And when you think you got all this data, more tape, more data, you know, the GPS data, all the things that you can think about from a data perspective, yet still a lot of it is a coin flip and a lot of things get messed up. You know, somebody like Braden Fisk last year should have went a lot higher, had a great year, but obviously it gets down to the quarterback position. And, you know, your history there with the Patriots, the Chiefs, and then the Seahawks, you had kind of the traits guys with Brady and Castle and Russell Wilson. And now that sort of tools versus traits debate, where do you sort of land on that? And then how do you guys at the Senior Bowl like put all that together and show teams, hey, this guy can actually be somebody that you can develop?
Oh, yeah. No. So for me, I think and this is why David was such a great player. I mean, to me, football is an instinctive game. I don't care what position you're talking about. You got to know how to play. You know, if you're a defensive player, you got to feel things. You got to see things. You got to be able to react quickly. And same thing with the quarterback position. If you look back at some of the quarterback, what we consider misses or what people consider misses, like why did Tom Brady go in the sixth? Why did Brock Purdy go to the seventh? They're from the neck up. They're great. You know, you hear the word processing all the time with quarterbacks, and that's what it is. I mean, that's what that position is. So, to me, coming from Seattle, like I talked about my experience in New England, Seattle, we were a very traits-based scouting operation. Like we wanted big, fast, strong alphas, you know, violent dudes. That's what that whole LOB defense was built on. Right. And those guys were instinctive as well. It's not like, I mean, Richard Sherman's the most instinctive corner I've ever been around, but you know, so traits is a really big deal to me, almost every other position on the field. If you give me the choice of, you know, a traits guy versus a non-traits guy that just, you know, knew how to play quarterback, I would take the latter. So, you know, and then when it comes to this game and who we're bringing at the quarterback position, you know, a lot of it comes down to like, who does the league need to see? I think this year the league really needs to see Jackson Dart. You know, they're, you know, Lane Kiffin, this is a compliment to Lane Kiffin. They do such a good job scheming up offense there that, like an assistant GM told me this fall, he's like, Jim, watching Ole Miss is like watching routes on air. I mean, the guys are running wide ass open and, you know, Jax is hitting them. But so they're excited to see Jackson Dart down here. A couple years ago, we had Tyson Bagent, a Division II kid from Shepherd University in West Virginia that had never even heard of that school before. You know, Tyson broke every Division II record there was. I really liked him. He reminded me of Tony Romo when I did Romo at Eastern Illinois. And, you know, we brought him down here. I thought he had a really good week. He still went undrafted. But then he goes to camp in Chicago that first year, and he beats out a free agent guy that paid a lot of money for. And he's been the number two in Chicago and went 2-2 as a starter his rookie year. So, but the league needed to see Tyson Bagent, right? Like, they needed to see him against better competition. So, I'm getting long-winded on you. I'll probably cut myself off now on the quarterback stuff.
No, that's fantastic. But you're right, man. And that's the coolest thing. Like I've coached 6-year-olds, Jim, and I've coached all the way up to high school and been around college and been around the NFL. Those instincts you can't teach. Like some people just have a feel and a knack, and we can write it up and we can say it needs to be done this way. Some suckers just find a way to get it done. And obviously, when you go against better competition this week at the Reese Senior Bowl, we'll see a bunch of this. We're looking forward to tuning in, man, and we really appreciate the insight of all the things that go into it and learn some good stuff about the Senior Bowl. And, Jim, we'll be watching, and we thank you for your time, my man.
Well, guys, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we can get you down next year. Maybe you can hop in the car and drive down. Let me know. We'll get you a credential.
We'll do it. We're in next year.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Thanks.